Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to once a week whenever it is movie night. When the store is quiet, I get to talk with my friends about what we're watching out in cinemas and on streaming platforms. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Good morning, Cole.
Hi.
How you, man?
I'm okay. All good.
You happy?
I'm great. I'm house-sitting Gavin Pincus's Bull Terriers.
Shout out to Gavin, who has been a guest on the video store.
Yeah. Do you know what their names are?
No.
It's Bean Sprout and Gooseberry.
Oh, that's adorable.
They're adorable.
Welcome to the video store, everyone. Thank you for choosing our video store. It has been 100 episodes of the video store.
Shucks.
We are so happy and so proud with the 100 episodes that we've done. And in case you've missed it, we're now making ourselves a little change. So myself and Cole, you were the first guest we ever had.
Oh, look
in
at
theory,
us.
It was the first episode that we put out was myself and you.
Coming full circle.
And I think it's lekker, man.
That's so nice.
That here we are in the new change. Basically, the change is that this episode is going to be just us behind the counter. And it, as you know, it's come out on Tuesday. And then later this week, we're going to have ourselves the guest chat. Where we're going to then get a visit from a guest. And that's just going to be a lovely sort of extra bonus chat, so to speak. What I'm excited about now is that the store is quiet and we get to talk shit.
Yeah, it's always the best part of the day.
And we don't have to worry about how long this whole big episode is going to be. We can just really get into it about what we're watching, what we're enjoying, and we can help you figure out what you can watch. Ooh, another thing to just mention quick. We do our video store presents nights. So as the Bioscope, this is where we're recording this episode. But we've got ourselves a cinema which we can use. So it's very cool that as the video store, we host every now and again a video store presents night. So I think it's really important to just mention at this point, in the week that this episode is coming out, we are doing a special video store presents night screening of The Fall Guy, which is the new Ryan Gosling. And we are able to screen it here at the Bioscope and present it as the video store the day before it comes out in cinemas. It's going to be in cinemas from this Friday, the 26th of April, but our video store presents night is going to be on the 25th of April. So this Thursday, 25th of April at 8 o'clock, tickets available at thebioscope.co.za.
That's our job.
I've been meaning to ask, who's that dude?
Oh.
In the corner there.
That's Perrin.
Perrin.
Yeah.
Perrin's chimed in a lot.
He has.
On social media and...
Yeah, he's like one of the regulars. Yeah, Perrin and I studied together at AFTA. And we were... You know when you're at film school, you expect to meet people that actually like films?
Yes.
And Perrin was one of those people. Like the person actually, the singular person that actually liked
him. Good. All right. Let's go say hi.
Let's call him over. Perrin.
Yes. Hi, Cole.
How's it?
I've been waiting in the wings all this time. You know.
How are you, man?
I'm good. How are you?
It's lovely to meet you.
Yeah.
It's lovely to put like a face to the person who's always participated in our social media.
Yeah, like you know, pushing my glasses to my brow. You know, tapping away on my keyboard.
Is my opinion.
Yeah, this is my opinion. You're all wrong. You know.
Try not to touch it too.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, sir. Oh.
Sorry, Graham.
No, I do it too. Don't worry. What do you do with your time, Perrin?
I watch movies, man.
That's good.
But when I'm not watching movies, I'm editing and I write the occasional review for funsies.
I've seen some of them.
Yeah,
I think perhaps the one we can kick off with is Civil War.
Yeah,
so you had some very strong emotional reaction to it.
Yeah, so I like So obviously I watched it at the, I got invited to the pre-screening.
Nah, we didn't get a pre-screening invite.
Yeah. Didn't we?
No, not for Civil War.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
You guys don't.
How did you get on that list?
I don't know. Okay. Honestly, there's I know a person and she hooks me up with posters as well. So
yeah.
Posters.
I love it.
But yeah, so I went to the, have you ever been to the Extreme Theatre in Clearwater?
No.
So it's not IMAX, it's Dolby Atmos Theatre.
Extreme.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And like, so went to that, wasn't like a press screening, was like just, I don't want to say, lack of a better word, normies.
Yeah.
And everyone was there. It was like cool. They had like a lot of A24 like merch and stuff, like the actual army soldiers, oh, those green things.
What?
And I was like, I want one of those. And they were like, no, you have to enter a competition. And I was like, I don't want to do that.
How did I miss this?
Check
the spam folder.
So like the reason why I ask if you've been, because when we went in the theater, I don't know if they did it for the movie, but the lights were green.
Okay.
So I couldn't, because I know New Metro's orange. Like,
yes.
So I was like, okay, that's pretty cool if they did do that. Anyways, that's one of the few of those like pre-screenings with like normal fans I've seen, where like everyone, you could hear a pin drop, like the whole movie. And yeah. It had a very visceral response on everyone, because the movie was also really like loud and like hard hitting. And I watched it again 2 days later.
Yeah.
Obviously my thoughts changed a little after the second viewing, but I still thought it was a really cool, visceral, like hard hitting film. It reminded me of Salvador, the Oliver Stone movie.
Okay.
About journalists in El Salvador, and James Woods, he's a bit of a tool now, but like a really good performing, like film about like photographers in a war zone. It reminded me of Killing Fields quite a bit as well.
Okay.
But yeah, it was a brutal film. I know a lot of Americans aren't too excited about it
because
it feels too hard, too close to home.
It's going to get rather lost and muddled, but perhaps with hindsight this movie is going to shine through. So it's a very near future look at, if America were to break out into civil war now, it could be very easily, when you just see the poster, or even if you maybe see some parts of the trailer, you might think it's going to be the silly action film.
Yeah.
You know, like a sort of ETV action, you know, the
Tonight on E.
But you know, the Gerald Butler, like, whatever has fallen, and angels, you know, it's like, oh, what happens if there were snipers in the White House? You know, it's like, it's not that. It's something a lot smarter. So it's Alex Garland, who is the guy who wrote The Beach. He did Ex Machina, Annihilation. It's a very smart, smart dude, a British guy.
Mm.
So he's perhaps got a bit of objectivity on America. And it's as if, as I said, there's the Civil War. So you get the sense that there's something called the Western Forces, which the only way to sort of muddle it so that it wasn't an obvious Democrats-Republicans is that he put California and Texas together as this Western Force, which in a weird way, it kind of makes...
It does make sense.
It does make some sense, because the Texans are so sort of fiercely... Mm. Wanting to be independent, in a sense, they are singular in themselves. California is very singular in themselves, so it kind of makes sense that, despite us knowing that they have quite different political leanings, they funny enough are very similar kind of people. But the film, and I think you said this, Cole, like it's actually not really about this big huge story. It's literally about three or four people that are making their way.
It's a road movie.
It's a road trip.
Yeah.
and what I loved about it is that beautiful part of America, that East Coast, the New England kind of part of the world, is very idyllic, and it's beautiful country, farmhouses. But here it is as this like very scary knife's edge terrorists that are out there, and anything could be around the corner, and this like absolute horror. Mm. Could be awaiting you if you're cornered by the wrong people. And there are these moments throughout the movie that are like almost these, dare I say it, but like sort of Tarantino-esque moments where it's like they're on a knife's edge. Like anything
Jesse
could,
Clemens.
Anything could change.
Such a scene, jeez.
And they hold you in these moments. Yeah. So I loved it. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but Dolby Atmos is a new sort of way of experiencing a movie.
Yeah.
It does include visual technology,
but
coming from a company that has specialized in sound, I would imagine a Dolby Atmos experience is more about the sound.
Yeah, so I mean, the cool thing is I actually can compare the two because I watched it at IMAX as well.
Yeah.
The IMAX one, there's times where the sound can be a little pitchy depending on where you are. Like I think I watched it at Mall of Africa. That one's quite pitchy.
But how strong were the gun sounds?
That's like, it's the best sound design for firefighting that I've heard since Heat. Like, just like you felt it rattle.
Someone also brought up Heat.
Oh, geez,
someone brought up Heat when I was chatting about this exact thing.
Mm.
So when you watch a John Wick, you get a bit desensitized to the sounds of guns, right? Because you just hear them throughout the movie.
Yeah,
and I think whoever is designing the sound is putting in gun sounds, but they're putting them in loud enough for you to know that they're guns, but they're not that loud. But if you've held a gun in real life,
loud.
If you've shot it in real life, it's fucking scary how like actually loud a gun is.
It always bothers me in movies when like a guy goes to a hotel and shoots someone and then no one in the fucking building hears it. It's like, bro, like, are you
kidding
me?
Guns are fucking loud. And they are scary and they are powerful. And this movie shows you that.
Yeah.
So there's one or two moments where there are sort of singular gun sounds. Mm. And then its climax is incredible because there's none of that kind of music. It's just gunfire. And when they take the White House at the end.
Oh, brutal.
Fuck, it's good.
Yeah,
like,
terrifying.
That's
Jesus, it's a good movie.
One thing I loved about, like you say, the gunshots, like it's always, I've noticed whenever it transitions to a firefight, it's always sudden. It's never like, it builds into it like, oh, we're heading into the...
They don't ease you in,
Yeah, like it'll literally be like suddenly they're fucking crazy gunfire and
stuff.
They
you with that sound, dude. No, that one cut. There was a cut, I can't remember what it was, but it was a cut from a talking scene.
Mm.
Oh, it's when they were going to go to the fight that was happening nearby when they were camping out at night and having drinks.
Yeah.
And then they cut to the next day with like a... And I properly threw my popcorn. That was a jump scare, dude.
It's a jump scare, 100%. Yeah. Like, and sorry, to go back, as all the interesting thing about the whole political landscape of the movie... is, and like you said, you don't know who's around the corner, you know, like you don't know who's the good guys, who the bad guys are.
What faction they are.
Exactly. Have you noticed, even the guys in the military outfits, no one was really wearing flags. I think the Western forces were the only ones where you could see at the end, but like, you didn't know who was who. There was those guys in the Hawaiian shirts.
Yes, by the petrol station.
Apparently they're the Florida, like, faction.
Okay.
Yeah. Because also, if you go on A24's Instagram page, you can actually see there's a map of the factions.
Yeah. So
there's the Florida guys, there's Oregon, there's like, and they mention them briefly in the film. Yeah. It's one thing I like about the movie is that, look, I know a lot of people don't like that there's not enough answers.
Yeah.
But I like that they let you decide how things are. And they tell it through like smart exposition where, I forgot the actor's name, sorry. Graham, I touched the microphone. The journalist character, the guy who works for the New York Times, the old
big guy.
I love that actor, and of course, I'm forgetting his name now.
I just know him as the Mentat.
He's great. But like, there's that scene where he's like talking about the questions he's going to ask the president. The main journalist, like, what are you going to ask him? Are you going to lowball him and stuff? And like, then he like asks questions where it's establishing what's happened that's caused everyone to lose their minds. Like, like bombing your own American citizens, like running for doing your third term in office.
Yeah, like, when he said that, then you know, like, okay, you're actually dealing with this sort of dictator and that the president is the bad guy.
And I love that moment as well. And like, because I felt it during the movie where like, especially that final assault on the White House, like where that journalist was like, once they get the president, like you say they're going to do, they're just going to tear each other apart afterwards because a new country is going to have to form.
Yes.
And like, everyone's clearly got differing opinions. People are racing to get the president because they want that notch in their belt, you know?
Yes.
But yeah, I thought it was phenomenal. Great action filmmaking, great suspense, great... Like, I love that they followed photographers instead of a soldier or a, you know, a family getting to the other side of the coast, you know?
Way of looking at it. It was a very emotional...
Yeah,
it was great. And it built it up quite slowly, which was quite nice.
Yeah.
So that by the end, you were like, I had a very emotional response.
Yeah, the pacing was phenomenal. It's only 109 minutes, and it was like the pacing was spot on.
It's one of the shorter films we're showing at the moment, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've got a few more screenings of it. I'll keep screening it if people keep coming at the Bioscope. But
Go watch it.
But yeah. I do understand how it might get a bit lost in the world, and perhaps it might only be... It might be one of those films that might only be appreciated a lot later.
Yeah, I think so.
And hopefully not when, you know, there actually is a proper
civil war.
When
America falls apart.
Hopefully it's not too prophetic.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, speaking of emotional responses, I got two tear jerkers to talk about. So let's also be establishing some shelves here, which is what we've always wanted to do.
Okay.
And I think there's a tearjerker shelf.
I love that.
And and on iTunes we rented One Life with Anthony Hopkins.
Mm.
Oh my God. Are you ready for this? I don't know whether everyone's seen it.
Mm.
But a very popular moment happened in television, which has now resurfaced in social media, where it was a moment in television in the 80s and the 90s where there was a guy who we knew from World War II who had saved a lot of people's lives. Have you ever seen this clip?
Yeah.
And the TV show got him to sit in the front of the audience.
Oh, yes.
Mm.
And there's this moment in the show where they said, you know, we've tracked down some of the people that you helped save during World War II. If you were one of those people, please stand up. And the whole fucking audience stands up. Even you watching this 2-minute clip on the internet, you break down. This is the story of that person.
Oh, wow.
Okay, so One Life.
No, I'm not watching that.
No, it's a delightful, delightful sort of happy cry.
Happy cries are the best. I've also got a happy cry.
So the guy...
Paddington 2, oh my God.
The guy's called Nicholas Winton. And just before World War II started, people consider World War II starting when... the Nazis invaded Poland.
Yeah, for sure.
But just before that, they were invading a couple other places, and they took over Czechoslovakia, what was then Czechoslovakia. And he went out on this trip or this mission, or he knew people there, and he started seeing what was happening. And he realized that we should try and get the kids of this country or this area out while the borders are still open, before the Nazis closed the borders. And he had to go through a lot of paperwork, but he just did it. And it was one of those where everyone around him said, this is impossible. But he said, we got to fucking try, right?
Yeah, of course.
He managed to get over 600 kids to safety. So it started with 20, started with another 20, but he he managed to get 600 kids.
Jeepers.
Then, of course, then it really got the, you know, they thought it was going to be temporary because they thought perhaps the occupation of Czechoslovakia was only going to be sort of temporary, just in case, right? But then, of course, all shit broke loose.
Yeah, for sure.
Fuck me.
You're feeling it already.
Yeah, well, also because my grandfather, as a young kid, got evacuated out of England.
Oh, okay.
When
during
shit
the bombings,
even got even worse.
Yeah.
England obviously had this. Well, the UK or Great Britain, whatever, had this. Had the colonies, and so the young kids got shipped off to the colonies to be safe.
Crazy,
so my grandfather was a little boy. He was like 7 or 9
That's
on
wild.
A ship.
Sheepers.
Taken to Cape Town. Had a foster family meet him.
Wow.
And he had his whole life. He created his whole life in Africa. I'm here so as a crazy. Product of this. So it was like, I didn't even think about it until I saw these little kids on trains, you know, traveling to the other part of Europe. And I was like, oh my God, I'm the result of this. Oh my God. No, it's a lovely,
but in the
happy
film,
cry.
You say it's Anthony Hopkins, but is it post, is it in his older life reflecting on the events?
So they cast a really great dude as a young Anthony Hopkins. Mm. It's the guy who was in Lovesick. He's been in a bunch of other
Johnny
things.
Flynn.
Johnny Flynn.
He played Bowie in that really bad Bowie movie.
What?
Okay. He played David Bowie. He does not look like David Bowie. Well, it was an odd movie.
He really looks like a young Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
And he it was really his movie, because the majority of the movie was in the World War II era. Lovesick is also it's a hidden gem. It's on Netflix.
I like Johnny Flynn. I haven't seen Lovesick. I do like him. I didn't like him as David Bowie.
I would imagine.
No, because Cole's a big Bowie fan.
Yeah.
Seek it out. I think it's called Stardust, and it's
there are a few Bowie movies. I think it's very hard to encapsulate Bowie.
Yeah.
But do you know Lovesick, Cole?
No.
Lovesick is amazing. The premise is so good. Our main character, played by this guy. Within the first 10 seconds, the whole show is set up. He's at a doctor's office, and he's just been told he's got chlamydia. and the doctor says, we advise that you contact all your previous partners to tell them that you have chlamydia. So each episode is him tracking down an old, either a girlfriend or like a girl he hooked up with. So he goes back to a bar or whatever. And the episode is about their sort of time together and their, you know, that whether it was a weekend or whether it was a long relationship.
Oh, interesting.
And of course he sort of falls for one of them again, and he's got this kooky buddy.
Mm.
The kooky buddy is actually a dude who's been in so much stuff. He's now in The Gentleman. He's the off the wall brother that.
Yeah, I got you.
You know, that causes all the shit in The Gentleman. So he's been in a lot of stuff.
Crazy.
But can I tell you the best part of Lovesick, which is on Netflix, by the way, because it started somewhere on British television. Mm. And I think it got picked up by Netflix and they commissioned more seasons. The best part, now that you know what this show is about, the original British name for the show, Scrotal Recall. How lovely.
That sounds like a direct, like those, you know, the like those badly translated Chinese menus and stuff.
Yeah,
You order Scrotal Recall for
but
90
what a,
rand.
What a great name. I mean, Lovesick makes far more sense to be more commercially available.
Come on, they should have done that.
They should have kept that.
No, of course they should have, but it makes some sense.
People air.
I've got one more really great tearjerker, which I want to put on the tearjerker shelf. Myself and Leslie are, it's now six months away, but our wedding is coming up this year.
Yay.
So,
well done.
That's amazing, dude.
Congrats.
So she's in full wedding frequency, right?
Got you.
So I think she's seeking out a bunch of wedding stuff on Netflix. Or Netflix somehow knows because the robots are getting smarter.
Yeah.
And she discovered this show called Say I Do, which, let me tell you, all signs would point to the fact that this is going to be a horribly cheesy, dumb Netflix reality TV show.
Yeah.
But let me tell you, there is a secret sauce to this show, which is the same secret sauce that is in Queer Eye.
Oh, okay? Yes. Okay, cool.
Okay, and what that is it's reality show where someone who is really deserving sort of gets something amazing that is life-changing for them. So we've got our three main hosts, which are three very delightful queer gentlemen, two of which are fucking handsome, to be honest. There's one guy in particular who's like, I even at one point out loud say to Liz, at one point I'm like, he's too handsome. And what they do is they've found, obviously the show's vetted these people, but they give a wedding to people that are the most deserving of a wedding. And of course, one part of this is, you know, just the sheer cost of a wedding that these people can't afford.
Yeah.
And they go through, the one guy designs the dress, which is this amazing moment, but then the other guy cooks the food and the other guy sort of plans the wedding. But the big fun thing is the fact that it's very quick. It's got to be done in like a week.
Okay.
because I guess that's just the show, so right? It's got to be, yeah, you know, same as Queer Eye. Like episode takes place over a week.
Yeah.
So it's all very sort of quick and last minute, but it's also for all these relationships that have been together for a long time, but for whatever reason, they were never able to get married. But let me tell you, it's good.
I Googled it. Is it Gabriele Bertaccini?
Let me see. I want to see. Is he the hot man?
Is he the middle guy?
The middle guy is the cook. He's not that. No, the other dude, Jeremiah.
Jeremiah Brents.
Look at more pictures of him.
Jeremiah Brents.
Is it? Yeah, it's Jeremiah.
The Jeremiah dude. He's,
I don't know. I went to Gabriel's
my boy as well.
Yeah, he's my boy.
You got to see Jeremiah. I can't believe we're having this conversation. You got to see Jeremiah in action.
You got to see him in this specific shirt. Oh my God. Yeah.
No. Let me tell you.
Anyway, I know. I feel you.
Gabriel's the.
He's the chef.
Oh, no. He's 100%
my guy.
My guy as well. Yeah. He can cook for me. You know,
I see him with some olive oil.
Yeah, well, you know? Covered in olive oil. Yes,
see him caramelizing some onions.
Okay.
That would like make me go nuts.
Okay.
You and me both, brother.
I've also got a tearjerker.
All right, let's hear it.
That came out of nowhere. Because while I was working, I'd do lunch and I had a hectic work week. So I was just pulling up Netflix and watching parts of something over the course of a week. And the greatest sin of this film is that they made Jimon Hounsou cry, which I didn't see coming.
Oh, I know what you're going to talk about.
It's Gran Turismo.
Really? Yes. I actually never saw it. Hey?
It is so good.
Really?
So it's like, it starts off really average. It's a good baseline, satisfies movie.
Yeah.
And it's a popcorn bit cliche, very popcorn. But then it gets to this like, what's Facing the Giants? What are those like big sports movies?
It's a big sports movie.
Like Underdog.
Takes over.
Movie, got you.
And it has that climax. And it works. And it's because of Stranger Things cop.
Mitchell?
David Harbour.
Harbour.
Dan Harbour.
I'm thinking David. Of the author.
Dan.
Yeah. It is Dan.
Dan.
I'm Googling it to confirm.
Okay, thanks.
That's why it's good that you guys invited me in this conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? While you Googling, I'll do the back of the box. It is the true story of when Gran Turismo, which is a very well-made
racing simulator,
so effectively a computer game, a PlayStation game, tried to see whether sim races could actually be real races in real life. Because they wanted to pride themselves on how well they've made the simulation.
How realistic it is.
And so it's a Japanese-made game.
Mm.
Nissan is a racing team, and obviously Nissan is a Japanese car. So could we could we create this kind of racing academy, and could we get these simulator drivers to compete against real drivers? And this is the true story.
Yeah,
which blew my mind.
Of the racer who succeeded.
That's crazy.
In the camp.
Yes, like.
And was then able to participate with other racers and actually do well.
Yeah.
David or Dan?
David.
I know it.
No way.
Yeah, I was shocked as well. You should have heard me gasp.
I'm having a Mandela effect moment.
David, I knew it was David Harbour.
Yeah.
He had such a great podcast interview where he was talking about the anxiety of performing in plays and how he had to sort of remember his lines and how he would be so confident he knew the lines, and he would say, like, moments before he had to go on stage, he'd be like, give me the fucking script, give me the fucking script.
It's like, have you ever had one of those moments where just before you know this person's name?
Yeah.
You know it, you've known them for years, and then you call them something completely different.
Oh my God.
It's traumatic.
I don't do names for that reason.
Yeah, I'm like,
I do two things. I just go, hey, nice to see you.
Yeah.
Well, the moment I heard nice to see you, I was like, oh, this is my ticket out.
Yeah.
Do you know nice to see you?
No.
So the best way to greet someone who, if you're unsure if you know if you've met them or not,
is you say
nice to see you. Because it could cover
see
you
good.
Again and it's nice to meet you. Because I've done that a few times where I've said nice to meet you and they go, we've met. And I'm like,
that's so true.
You have to fucking forgive me.
Because I've done that before and they've done it to me before. Where I'm like, we've already met. You know, like, nice to see you is such a good trick.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other thing I've done, especially when I like would take a partner to like an award ceremony where there's lots of people, I've said to my partners, I've said, if I don't introduce you, you need to introduce yourself as a way for me to learn their name.
Exactly. There's times where I've got a big group of people, and sometimes I know all these people. I know them quite well, but a part of me in my head is going, I'm going to fuck this up.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to call my good mate Thomas here, Peter, for some reason.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, these are all my friends.
Yeah.
This is so-and-so.
Yeah, no, yeah. No. And you just freak out in that moment where you're like, oh, I've now forgotten your name. But of course you know their name. But I've had one or two people recently now, I think this is the later half of my 30s, where I recognize them immediately, and I'm like, I could not tell you which chapter in my life you were from.
Yeah, no, 100%.
And I'm also that person, I don't know whether it's a good or a bad thing, but I'm confident enough to go, what part of my life are you from?
They're a little puppy. Little guy.
And this one woman at 44 Stanley, she was taken aback, but in a happy way. She goes, high school. And I'm like, oh my God, it's so nice to see you. I did it days later, and I got the complete opposite reaction, which was like, varsity, Russell, Jesus, fuck. And I was like, I'm sorry,
back to Grand Tours.
Yeah. So Orlando Bloom plays the dude who was the visionary to try and make this campaign happen for Nissan. And then David Harbour from Stranger Things was the racing coach who he brought on to try and make this crazy idea happen. The main dude is a mixed race dude who was also in Saltburn.
Yes. He was the asshole sort of friend. He was in Midsommar as well.
Yes, he was.
The British, one of the guy gets hanged up.
In Midsommar.
Wings, yeah.
He gets butterflied.
Yeah, he's also in Beau's Afraid, fun fact. Did you guys watch?
Yeah, I haven't yet. I've been putting it off.
There's a scene, you've seen it, right?
Yeah.
There's a scene where where a guy is about to jump off a building, and they're filming him.
Yes.
That guy's we're trying to get him to jump. He's that guy.
But his name's Archie, and he's got a surname that sounds like it's Madikwe.
Oh yes, yeah.
It sounds like it could be perhaps South African. His near lineage is Southern African, but yeah.
Calls on it.
Because the real life character was this person who was mixed race. It's just, when you get to that moment at the end of the movie when the real life person sort of the photos come up and you're like, fuck.
Archie cool. Madekwe.
Madekwe.
So you weeped
Jimon Hounsou crying. Yeah.
He's the dad.
And he's being a dad. It's I'm proud of you, my son.
His mom in the movie is Jerry Halliwell, the Spice Girl.
Oh, wow.
And she wasn't a bad actress.
I did not get that. That is terrifying.
Fun fact.
Baby Spice.
No, Ginger.
I put it off as well, because this was before, Last of Us came out, good video game adaptations. And I was just because also I had trauma reminiscing Gran Turismo, because that game was so fucking hard.
Yeah, it was so hard.
And it was too realistic.
And my brother loved it.
Yeah, my brother as well. We're obsessed.
Yeah, it was made to be as realistic as possible.
Yeah.
So I think many things, you either got to make it easy and accessible and fun and a bit take some creative license, or in this creative world, you've got to be the best, most kind of...
Because, how do you make a driving simulator movie? So, it's good that they took that actual thing that happened.
Yeah. And they only tell you at the end that it's real, because I didn't know.
Oh, no, the whole movie is called Gran Turismo, based on a true story.
Well, it's not on the poster, and the letterbox title says Gran Turismo, so I don't know what you're talking about.
On Netflix, its byline says... based on a true story.
I didn't read that far.
You just I'm in.
No, but it's really good. And the best part about it, the director.
South African.
He's a Saffer.
He's a Saffer. Neil
Blomkamp. Who we know from.
This is what they got him making instead of
District
Alien
9.
4.
Yeah. Or District 10. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's.
What have you?
District 9.5.
Okay, so that's your tearjerker, which I also agree with. I think it's a goodie. You don't have to have a tearjerker, but what have you been enjoying?
I've got I do have a tearjerker.
Oh, lekker.
It's, I watched it last year, but it's the most recent one that comes to mind because it like traumatized me. It's not a happy cry. It's a sad cry.
Yeah.
I know.
Belgian film called Close. It's about, it's like a queer coming of age story about two best friends. Okay. And something happens where their friendship is like, I don't want to give anything away. Their friendship is essentially blown apart. They're like, are drifting away from each other.
Okay.
And it is, so I rewatched it.
Okay.
Because every year, yeah, that's one. It was nominated for best international film at the Oscars 2 years ago.
Okay.
So not this year, last year. Okay. I think it should have won. I can't remember what won.
Okay.
2002.
No, last year.
Can't remember.
I can't remember. But it is just so heart-wrenching. Like, it's beautiful. The some of the best child performances I've ever seen, like child actor performances.
Oh, it was All Quiet on the Western Front.
Oh, no, it should have, Close should have won. Like, it's just stunning. Such a beautiful film. Heart-wrenching. If you want an ugly cry, like a sad ugly cry, that's the one to go for.
We have a night at the Bioscope. Bring it back. We actually are bringing it back in spirit for Mother's Day. But we've had this thing, and this is what I love about the Bioscope, is that I could come up with this crazy idea, and it's usually in these kinds of conversations where you go, oh my God, that would be such a great thing at the Bioscope.
Yeah.
And it was a night conceived called Ugly Cry Night, where your ticket includes a pocket pack of tissues and an ice cream, because you know we sell the little tubs of homemade ice cream.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, ugly cry.
You're going to fuck up this audience close. If you play Close. Yes.
Is it available anywhere?
So I've got the Blu-ray. released by Mubi. So it's on Mubi. I don't know, because Mubi is in South Africa as well. It's a like art house streaming.
Yeah, it's the thinking person's Netflix, which is MUBI.
Yeah, Mubi's great. But like, obviously South Africa's Mubi is quite limited. I have a VPN, so it's on the UK and American one. A24 distributed it in America. Mubi distributed it everywhere else.
Okay.
Belgian film, fucking gorgeous. It's like a great, it's one of the best films I've seen about, it's one of the best, like, youth queer movies, you know, where like it shows otherness of these people, because that's what queerness is, right? Mm. Otherness. So like that, but also another tearjerker. There's a movie called Monster by Koreeda. He's a Japanese filmmaker. He did did you watch Shoplifters?
I watched Shoplifters, and
that was a
Nobody Knows.
Yes, he also did a movie called Afterlife, which is phenomenal. One of the best movies in the 90s.
They're all ugly. Well, no, Shoplifters was a nice cry movie.
It was a beautiful film.
Nobody Knows was traumatizing.
So Monster is also,
is it recent?
Last year, 2023. Yeah. So that made my, I do a list every now and then. And that made my top 10. Anyways, moving on.
Yeah.
So Monster is about, it's done in almost like a Rashomon style, where it's like three different viewpoints of the same event.
Okay.
Right. And it's about this child who's starting to act strange, and his mother can't figure out why. And then we find out that he's become friends with this other kid in class, and like, it's all surrounding one event, and it's just unbelievable. That filmmaker Koreeda is just incredible.
Japanese.
It's a happy cry. There is sad cry in it,
yeah.
But like, it's one of those queer films. Because I also, the problem with a lot of queer movies is that it's always fucking heartbreaking, or like it always ends in tragedy, or it's just it's basically like trauma porn, a lot of queer movies, right? And even though I love a lot of those movies that are traumatizing to me, this is one of those movies where it's like I don't want to ruin anything by giving anything away, but I also want to tell people that you're coming for a good reason. You know what I mean?
Like,
it'll be good by the end of it. Like, you'll be happy by the end of it.
I've said this before. I think it was the film Manchester by the Sea. I put it off because it just looked way too fucking sad.
Brutal.
And I'll never forget, we were all watching it on a plane. I think it was the band going on one of the tours. And the one guy watched it, and I think it was in a layover that he was like, oh, no, it's not that bad. Like, there's moments of happy. It's funny at times. And I was like, okay, now I can watch it. In my head, I was like, I'd put it off. Because it was like, it just looks like a drag through the mud. I was like, I don't want to see this trauma for 2 hours. But then when someone gave me a little bit of a review that, like, don't worry, it's like, there's moments. Like,
yeah, there's some fun
they
moments.
They let the air out at times. Yeah, and like the, okay, now I can watch it.
When he drops the frozen chicken on the floor and he starts crying and he's like, it's just frozen chicken. You don't need to cry. It's all good. You're going to be fine.
But there's, just to circle back to what we have spoken about and just this idea of the tearjerker, there's a couple of these weddings that they do in Say I Do where it's queer weddings.
Okay.
Which, you know, in America you were only recently able to get married.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was one episode in particular where they are together, they are gay, but the one guy has been like not hiding it from his family, but but making it not an issue, right?
They've
never kissed like in front of their family.
Oh, geez, okay.
You know, the family are very sort of Christian, or you know, that it doesn't come up. Mm. But he wants to, you know, and so there's this moment of like, you know, how do you kiss at the wedding? How do you, you know?
Yeah.
And it was about him. This. It wasn't about the wedding. The episode was about so much more. They all took him to this like queer bar where they were all telling stories, where people were saying about how much they have been, you know, had prejudice over their life and how they felt confident in themselves and you know, they eventually got him to say something and he felt better, and it's like, ah. And the main, one of the main guys who is the Asian dude who does the clothing, his parents still don't accept him as being queer, as being gay. And so, like, he breaks down and he tells these stories and it's like, it's so much more than a fucking wedding reality show.
I'm in, hey.
Yeah,
I'm in for Gabrielle.
Yeah.
It's
better than Anthony.
Stupid Anthony from Queer Eye.
There's also a very interesting experiment reality TV show on Netflix called Unlocked.
Ooh.
It's an interesting show. I'm not enjoying it, but I think it's a very interesting thing to have happened, which is, they have taken a particular section of a prison in America and they've conducted this experiment where they've allowed them to move freely. So they've unlocked the doors in their ward, and they are filming these guys as they are free to do more stuff themselves.
Yeah, okay.
Some of them have committed capital murder. So they're like, they're real like hard ass dudes.
Oh, like actual murderers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jeez, so it's like, but there's the old guys and there's the new guys, but it's this reality TV show that is showing how they are like, it's such an interesting experiment.
Did you ever watch a movie called Das Experiment?
Mm-mm.
German film. Mm-hmm. Adrian Brody did a remake of it. I never watched the remake. But basically, like, that brought that up to me, is that the movie is about...
The experiment.
Yeah. Das Experiment. And like, basically it's about these like volunteers, they get paid to take part in this experiment. Obviously all these guys are there for various reasons, and literally some of them get chosen to be guards and the rest of them are prisoners.
There was the Stanford
prison experiment.
Yeah,
I think it's based around that. Yeah,
that was done in real life in Stanford.
Yeah, so I think it might have been that.
That's
based
wild.
On that.
And that footage, I remember seeing that. I did 1 year of psychology at varsity.
Yeah.
And there were some photos in the textbook about this. They took these college students down into the basement at Stanford, and all they said, they didn't say anything else. They just said, "You're guards, you're prisoners."
Yeah, that's exactly what happened.
And they left them. They left them. Yeah. And then they were after a few days, but this is all in real life.
Yeah, that's mad.
After a few days, you know, or like a day or two, everyone's cool, everyone's chilled, till eventually, over time, the guards started identifying as guards. The prisoners started identifying as prisoners because of the students who were told they were guards. And by the end of it, they had them in fucking jail.
That's fucking insane.
They controlled
and they were physically
abusive. How long did they last for?
I think it was a few weeks.
Jeez, like, when did this happen? Like,
I want to say like the 90s.
Okay, like 80s or 90s. So the movie's definitely inspired by that, but yes, it's a great fucking movie. Great, great, great movie. And then what did I want to say about... Oh, sorry, going back to like when you said Unlocked as well, I want to bring up a little TV show from back in the... Do you remember Sony Max, the channel on DSTV? There was Anime Max.
Yes.
And then there was Sony Max where they had like Mansa's, a terrible show where like everything answer had to do with men being men and anyways.
What?
Yeah, it was...
Okay, but is that what you want to talk about?
No.
Okay.
It's a show called Solitary. Okay. It was fucking insane. So like I actually think it was a form of torture because the whole show you would win $50,000, right? Which is way too little. But basically, they would put people in these little solitary confinement rooms, right? Yeah. And you would be competing against the other rooms, right?
Okay.
But they'd be doing certain challenges, and they would often be like endurance challenges, right?
Okay.
But the thing is, you would not know if someone has pulled out of that challenge. So the first person to pull out gets eliminated.
Okay.
So a guy will do a challenge for like 5 hours not knowing that everyone pulled out in minute 20. You know what I mean? And like if you win that challenge, you get a reward. So they'll give you like sushi or like you get to sleep for 4 hours. Everyone else gets punished and they'll be like nonstop strobing and like loud noises for like 6 hours.
Wow.
And they have to like try sleep. And
Where was this made?
It was an American show.
Okay.
And they did like 3 seasons, probably because they stopped it because they're like, this is human torture.
Abuse.
Like, and it was just madness. It was like a show you're watching and you're like, I cannot believe this existed. And I haven't been able to find it since. It's probably bouncing around on YouTube or Dailymotion or something.
Yeah.
But Jesus.
What is it called?
Solitary. It was Solitary. Fucking mad.
I do think the one thing that is amazing about reality TV shows is how it can become this human experiment.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And I think America certainly needs to address certain problems. We know this. Whether it would ever change, who knows? But, you know, the way that they've incarcerated people, how they treat certain people is, you know, needs a change. And so this was an interesting experiment because, you know, the prisons that are in Europe, for example, they look like hotels.
Yeah, it's crazy. I've seen them. Yeah,
you know, it's about a human dignity and it's about how these people make it out. Because what I found amazing was when you do watch Unlocked, the part that I am saying I sort of struggled with and perhaps I don't like it is the fact that the reality of what these people are like as actual people is frustrating.
Yeah, 100%.
Because we've seen cop shows, movies, TV shows where, you know, everyone's so eloquent and well, you know. There was another movie we watched this weekend called Brian Banks about the true life story of the football player
who
was wrongly
accused.
It's on
Netflix, right?
Yeah, and it's all about him, you know, getting freeing his name. That's also a nice little tearjerker. But, you know, Morgan Freeman is the guy in the jail that sort of helps him, you know, mentors him. But when you watch Unlocked
on Netflix, brutal, dude.
It's like, these are not smart people.
Yeah.
They are not wise.
Yeah.
They have spent the majority of their life in jail. Like, they are not articulate.
Yeah.
They have tattoos all over their faces.
Yeah,
and it's very hard to take them, like,
a bit
more seriously, even though they are trying their best to articulate themselves.
Yeah.
Like, society has left these people.
Yeah.
And
no,
so
totally.
It's very difficult to, like, hear them talk in real life. But there's a guy called Squirrel and a guy called Shorty and there's a dude who does hand poke tattoos. You know, it's like,
it's wild.
And they fight in such a terrible, like, inarticulate way about stupid shit.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing experiment to sort of how these guys are coming together to say, like, we can't fuck this up, guys.
Yeah.
Because if we participate, we're going to get more rewards. If we, if it all buckles, like, we'll just go back to being in these locked cells.
Do you know what's sad is, like, a lot of those guys you just described, have probably, they're institutionalized. They've been in and out of jail for most of their lives since juvie, you know, like, it's, like, America's whole prison system is completely fucked.
That's
like, the whole revolving door system. Like, John Oliver's done quite a few good pieces where they talk about, like, sentencing. And, like, guys will get sentenced to jail for, like, 40 years for a joint, you know?
Yeah.
Or, like, because they got caught in, like, the 60s or something.
Yeah.
Or, like, There's been there's so many good movies out there. Like I think it's called The 13th on Netflix as well. It's about America's obsession with the prison system. How it's effectively not actually a system to what's the word when you
rehabilitate
at all. It's become a business.
Because people make money
privately.
Out of
like it's absolute madness.
No, and this Brian
Watch
Banks
13th.
No, it's called the 13th, I think. It's like the 13th Amendment or something. Okay.
The
13th.
Ava DuVernay. Yeah, she's great. Yeah.
Ava DuVernay.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Have you seen Origin?
No, have you seen the When They See Us?
I actually never finished it. I watched the first episode and my girlfriend was like, this is making me too upset.
When They See Us is like a miniseries on Netflix.
I've been dying to finish it.
It was the most powerful thing I watched last year.
Yeah.
But it came out years before.
Yeah. I remember,
We must talk properly about it. But it's When They See Us on Netflix. No, but the Brian Banks film also just shows you how broken that system is.
It's ridiculous, yeah.
Mm. But Chappies. We can talk about this forever. So we will come back again and talk more.
Should we? Is there anything while else? We have Perrin, should we run our questions by him quickly?
Well, I think we must get. I thought about this with a new person. You know, we've got these questions that we ask guests.
Yeah.
And the questions are the films that you've loved across your life.
Okay.
So there's the four great loves that we have: the puppy love film, high school crush, It's Getting Serious, and the film you'd settle down with. So for today, let's just do the first one.
Okay,
because we're going to get to know you in time, which is the first film is your puppy love film, which is one of the first film memories you have.
Ooh.
And one of the first films you sort of feel like you love.
First film memories.
Or like your first favorite, maybe.
Yeah.
First favorite.
Like when you were a lighty.
Hook.
Lovely.
Yeah. That was like a first. That was like my favorite movie as a kid.
This is the answer.
Yeah. So
it's nursery school, primary school.
Yeah.
It's that fun, somewhat innocent film.
Yeah. I think my first movie going experience like that I remember was The Lion King.
Sure. For a lot of people on the show, it's Lion King.
And then it was like vividly Lion King and Toy Story. Yeah. Because Lion King was 94, I think. Mm. Toy Story was 95, but the movie that like I remember obsessively loving was Hook.
And don't you find it amazing that was Dustin Hoffman?
I know. Wow.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
You come back to that and go, wait, hang on, what?
And wildly, I haven't visited it in such a long time, revisited it. And
the little kid who gets kidnapped by Hook grew up to be the geeky, nerdy kid and can't hardly wait.
Yes, So like that was
it's like his two big roles.
Yeah, I remember. So like also because we had it on VHS, I think. And then I remember when we got DVD and stuff like that. That was like, I remember that was like the first Christmas where we had a DVD player. I was like, Dad, I want Hook. I need Hook.
It's lovely. It's a good one. Magic, man. But listen, I think you're going to be such a lovely addition to the team.
Thanks, Oaks.
It's lovely to have you. We've cornered you from the corner of the video store.
Leave me alone.
I think I'd like to sort of formally ask whether you want to get a job here.
Yeah, bro. Like, hook us up, eh?
Okay, you can get free posters.
Yes, for my poster collection.
I can now be that guy. I'm getting so many more posters as a result of all the releases we're doing this year at the Bioscope. You know, before we had DCP, it was smaller indie films most of them never had posters.
No.
Where now I'm dealing with the distributors that hand me like a whole bunch.
Yeah.
And so it's just so nice that I was that person similar to you where you found someone who could give you posters. And it was usually the video store.
Yeah, I had a poster guy. I have several poster guys.
It sounds like it. Well, now you're going to be that guy.
Yeah, you pay me in posters and maybe Paul's ice cream. I like that. Yeah.
Very possible.
We'll talk about it.
Lekker, Didi. Thanks for your time today. Thanks,
Paul. Guys.
Wonderful.
And we'll see you again next week. Well, later this week. Shit.
Yeah.
New format. Later this week.
Cool.
All right. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye.